This is the listening section. I'm going to give you the instructions for this section. I'll introduce each part of the section and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part 1.
Part 1. From question 1 to question 5. Listen to a conversation between Eric and Karina about a holiday trip. Choose the correct answer from A, B, or C for each of the following question.
How was your trip?
Don't ask.
What? I thought it was going to be a dream holiday.
I am never going on a package tour again. Dream holiday? It was more of a nightmare.
Oh, what happened?
Well, you know we were going to Prague, Bratislava, Budapest and Vienna. All beautiful places. But the tour guide on the coach with us was terrible. He was a lovely man, very friendly, maybe a bit too friendly. And he didn't know much about the cities we were going to, but I could live with that. No, the real problem was that he, well, he had no cultural awareness at all.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, when we got to Prague, the first thing he showed us was where to have fish and chips.
Mm.
I didn't go all the way to Prague to have fish and chips. I asked him where to have Czech food, and he told me not to bother because it wasn't very good.
But Czech food is great.
Of course it is. I went off on my own and had some wonderful food.
Oh, good.
Oh, it gets worse. So, in Bratislava, he proudly announced that instead of the usual breakfast, he'd arranged for us to have bacon and eggs, just like in the UK.
Yeah, because that is what Slovakia is famous for.
Exactly. Then in Budapest, we were meant to go to a place for traditional music, but he cancelled it and... You'll never believe this. He took us to a sports bar to watch Manchester United versus Liverpool.
I bet you enjoyed that.
The place was full of British people. And you know what? No one else complained. They were happy with the football. Why do people travel thousands of miles just to behave like they do back home? Next time, I'm going it alone. No more package holidays for me.
Be careful, though. Remember what happened to me when I went on holiday on my own.
Remind me?
Well, I thought I didn't need a package holiday. I thought I could book it cheaper online. I thought things would be easier. Anyway, it was a lot quicker to book, and I got exactly what I wanted.
But?
But everything went wrong. I flew to an airport that was about 40 miles from my hotel. The flight was 3 hours delayed, so I didn't land until about 1 in the morning. There was no public transport. I ended up paying over £60 on a taxi. Then, when I got to the hotel I'd booked online, it was completely closed. They didn't accept check-in after 11 p.m.
What did you do?
Well, there was another hotel 50 metres down the road. I had to pay to stay there. Another £60. Don't laugh. It's not funny. I was £120 out of pocket.
Sorry, it does sound terrible.
Now you'll hear part 1 again.
How was your trip?
Don't ask.
What? I thought it was going to be a dream holiday.
I am never going on a package tour again. Dream holiday? It was more of a nightmare.
Oh, what happened?
Well, you know we were going to Prague, Bratislava, Budapest and Vienna. All beautiful places. But the tour guide on the coach with us was terrible. He was a lovely man, very friendly, maybe a bit too friendly. And he didn't know much about the cities we were going to, but I could live with that. No, the real problem was that he, well, he had no cultural awareness at all.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, when we got to Prague, the first thing he showed us was where to have fish and chips.
Mm.
I didn't go all the way to Prague to have fish and chips. I asked him where to have Czech food, and he told me not to bother because it wasn't very good.
But Czech food is great.
Of course it is. I went off on my own and had some wonderful food.
Oh, good.
Oh, it gets worse. So, in Bratislava, he proudly announced that instead of the usual breakfast, he'd arranged for us to have bacon and eggs, just like in the UK.
Yeah, because that is what Slovakia is famous for.
Exactly. Then in Budapest, we were meant to go to a place for traditional music, but he cancelled it and, you'll never believe this, he took us to a sports bar to watch Manchester United versus Liverpool.
I bet you enjoyed that.
The place was full of British people. And you know what? No one else complained. They were happy with the football. Why do people travel thousands of miles just to behave like they do back home? Next time, I'm going it alone. No more package holidays for me.
Be careful, though. Remember what happened to me when I went on holiday on my own.
Remind me?
Well, I thought I didn't need a package holiday. I thought I could book it cheaper online. I thought things would be easier. Anyway, it was a lot quicker to book, and I got exactly what I wanted.
But?
But everything went wrong. I flew to an airport that was about 40 miles from my hotel. The flight was 3 hours delayed, so I didn't land until about 1 in the morning. There was no public transport. I ended up paying over £60 on a taxi. Then, when I got to the hotel I'd booked online, it was completely closed. They didn't accept check-in after 11 p.m.
What did you do?
Well, there was another hotel 50 metres down the road. I had to pay to stay there. Another £60. Don't laugh. It's not funny. I was £120 out of pocket.
Sorry, it does sound terrible.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. You will hear an interview with a woman called Britt Foxton, who is talking about women's basketball.
My guest today is Britt Foxton, the founder of a website devoted to women's basketball, who's just written a book on the same subject. Hi, Britt. Great to meet you.
Hi. Great to be here.
First up, tell us how you got started with the site.
Well, although it really got going once I was at university, it actually started out as a high school project, you know, design a website kind of thing. But it wasn't like anyone expected it to become real or anything. I designed a site about girls' basketball, which I was passionate about, and called it femalebasket.com. I knew the name wasn't right, and before it got really successful, I changed it to matchgirl.com, and that was a really good move.
So what's on the site, Britt?
Well, although it started with basketball, it's kind of evolved to include other games as well. It features a variety of articles, reviews and editorials on everything ranging from basketball to computer games, plus a smattering of more traditionally girly material as well. But the coverage of team sports is at the heart of it. Anything about makeup or fashion is just peripheral.
And now you've written a book about girls' basketball. How long did it take to write?
Overall, the writing of it took about 3 months. I knew I wanted to write the book late last year and started to loosely plan it out in January of this year. It wasn't until May that I had enough time to get down to doing everything I'd envisioned, but it was all done by the end of July.
And in researching the book, did you come across any interesting facts?
Well, surprisingly enough, women began playing basketball less than a year after the men's game was invented, back in 1892. It didn't become an Olympic sport until 1976, however, whereas the men's game was in there from 1936. And that tells you a lot about how it developed.
Mm. Would we recognise the game the way it started, or has it changed?
Well, the biggest difference is in clothing. Back then, in the USA, women were required to play in full-length dresses. The only body parts that could be exposed were fingers, necks and heads. And it wasn't the only discomfort they suffered. It led to quite a few broken bones because players tended to trip over their skirts and stuff.
Incredible. And the men didn't have these problems?
No way. So, like, at the end of a woman's game, there'd be, like, handkerchiefs and hairpins scattered all over the court, which, of course, wasn't the case with the men. So you can see how the two developed in quite different ways, even with a differently sized court for many years.
But things did change.
Sure, but quite slowly, really. Appropriate clothing came in gradually, but even well into the 20th century, some other rules applied to women, but not to men. Not so much the equipment, but silly things like chewing gum were specifically prohibited in the women's game because it was considered unfeminine, not because it was dangerous or whatever.
Oh, gosh. And you've got some good stories from those years in the book, I think.
Yeah, like when in 1936, a team of women basketball players called the Redheads toured the country playing exhibitions against men's teams. A strange thing was, though, these girls not only had to wear the same clothes, they all had to have red hair. Most of them had to dye it, specially.
Oh, brilliant. Are there any topics which you wish you'd devoted more space to in the book?
If I did it again, I'd do it all differently. I know I ought to be proud of what I've done, but I'm such a perfectionist. Given the chance, I'd add significantly more information on the cultural traditions and really address the growing basketball fan base. But maybe there's another book in there somewhere.
Let's hope so. Britt, thanks for telling us about it.
Now you'll hear part two again.
My guest today is Britt Foxton, the founder of a website devoted to women's basketball, who's just written a book on the same subject. Hi, Britt. Great to meet you.
Hi. Great to be here.
First up, tell us how you got started with the site.
Well, although it really got going once I was at university, it actually started out as a high school project. You know, design a website kind of thing. But it wasn't like anyone expected it to become real or anything. I designed a site about girls' basketball, which I was passionate about, and called it femalebasket.com. I knew the name wasn't right, and before it got really successful, I changed it to matchgirl.com, and that was a really good move.
So what's on the site, Britt?
Well, although it started with basketball, it's kind of evolved to include other games as well. It features a variety of articles, reviews and editorials on everything ranging from basketball to computer games, plus a smattering of more traditionally girly material as well. But the coverage of team sports is at the heart of it. Anything about makeup or fashion is just peripheral.
And now you've written a book about girls' basketball. How long did it take to write?
Overall, the writing of it took about 3 months. I knew I wanted to write the book late last year and started to loosely plan it out in January of this year. It wasn't until May that I had enough time to get down to doing everything I'd envisioned, but it was all done by the end of July.
And in researching the book, did you come across any interesting facts?
Well, surprisingly enough, women began playing basketball less than a year after the men's game was invented, back in 1892. It didn't become an Olympic sport until 1976, however, whereas the men's game was in there from 1936. And that tells you a lot about how it developed.
Would we recognise the game the way it started, or has it changed?
Well, the biggest difference is in clothing. Back then, in the USA, women were required to play in full-length dresses. The only body parts that could be exposed were fingers, necks and heads. And it wasn't the only discomfort they suffered. It led to quite a few broken bones because players tended to trip over their skirts and stuff.
Incredible. And the men didn't have these problems?
No way. So, like, at the end of a woman's game, there'd be, like, handkerchiefs and hairpins scattered all over the court, which, of course, wasn't the case with the men. So you can see how the two developed in quite different ways, even with a differently sized court for many years.
But things did change.
Sure, but quite slowly, really. Appropriate clothing came in gradually, but even well into the 20th century, some other rules applied to women, but not to men. Not so much the equipment, But silly things like chewing gum were specifically prohibited in the women's game because it was considered unfeminine, not because it was dangerous or whatever.
Oh, gosh. And you've got some good stories from those years in the book, I think.
Yeah, like when in 1936, a team of women basketball players called the Redheads toured the country playing exhibitions against men's teams. A strange thing was, though, these girls not only had to wear the same clothes, they all had to have red hair. Most of them had to dye it, specially.
Oh, brilliant. Are there any topics which you wish you'd devoted more space to in the book?
If I did it again, I'd do it all differently. I know I ought to be proud of what I've done, but I'm such a perfectionist. Given the chance, I'd add significantly more information on the cultural traditions and really address the growing basketball fan base. But maybe there's another book in there somewhere.
Let's hope so. Britt, thanks for telling us about it.
That is the end of the test. Please stop now.